Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guests, I want you to know that I am truly grateful to all of you who take your precious time to listen to or watch this show. And please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant to you and your family. Now, we're going to talk about children, and our children will face many challenges in the years ahead. So we want to raise them to be resilient, right? We want them to be strong. We want them to be adaptable and able to recover from life's challenges. It is our mission to empower our son or daughter to cultivate a functional and fulfilling life. Now, our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is Resilience Parenting, Raising Resilient Children in an Era of Detachment and Dependence. Our guests, Chris and Holly Santillo, are not your usual authors. Chris has a degree in computer science from Harvey Mudd College and an MBA from Georgetown University. Holly has a degree in anthropology from Willamette University, and they are the epitome of the phrase, a healthy mind in a healthy body. Now, having strong backgrounds in martial arts, with Chris being the founder and head instructor at Potomac Kempo in Alexandria, Virginia, and Holly being a senior instructor, they have managed to utilize the principles of martial arts and mold them into a cohesive parenting methodology. Now, they believe that children and parents are with broader horizons and an open mind can sow the seeds of future generations of confident, strong, and resilient adults. Chris, Holly, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you very much, Alan. We're very happy to be here.
Thanks, Alan.
Yes, well, it is my pleasure. And when we were talking right before we went on the air, you mentioned a term that I am unfamiliar with. So share with me, when I asked you about where you're living now, you used a term that I thought was wonderful. Share it with everybody.
We are location independent currently, or intentionally homeless. Is that another, does that work?
Living nomadically. Living nomadic. I've never heard location independent before either. That was quite crafty, honey.
Yeah, about 2.5 years ago, we started a sabbatical / midlife crisis, and we picked up with our three kids, of course, and have started traveling around the world. And here we are in Ireland now.
And I absolutely love it. And again, when you said that, and I thought, you know what, location independent, that is such a wonderful way. And I can imagine explaining that to the kids that way, you know, is got to be very empowering for them to not only see the world, but to feel comfortable that they can kind of go anywhere and, you know, and become part of whatever that particular culture is. So I think it's beautiful.
No matter where we are, we are never lost, Alan. This family is our home.
That rings a bell. Why does that sound so familiar? Oh, that's our family travel credo. No, actually, believe it or not, the trip came after the book. So that's not in the book, but it is on the website.
It's on the website. Okay, that's where.
No, but you're absolutely right. The ability to interact with the world and go meet people and ask to use the restroom in Chinese
or Mongolian,
how to pet your dog in Mongolian. These are skills of going out and meeting strangers and appreciating how connected we are and how able we are to interact with the world and wherever we are in whatever form we need to. So it is both a test of resilience and at the same time cultivating more resilience.
I think it's great. I don't know if you're aware, but as an international detective, I have traveled all over the world. And one of the things that I offered to my children, and the way I was traveling, it wasn't the type of things I could take them with me on. But at the same time, I told them that what will be waiting for them, upon graduation from college and such, will be a round-the-world pass that they can then take and go around the world. It'll be a round the world pass and a Euro pass. Right. So I said, so that, you have your air travel and you have your ground travel and I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to pay for it because I think it's that important for them to go out, see the world, see what else is out there rather than this little area that they've been raised. And unfortunately now the influences that are provided either by social media or, network news or whatever, to get out and actually meet people, I think you're much better at not having to pass judgments when you can say, well, you know what? I don't think that about those people because I've been there.
Yeah. No, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. And I think that's wonderful that you're going to do that.
Incredible, Alan. It's rare. It's wonderful.
The number of people that have said, oh, you can't take your kids to Russia. It's dangerous. And you can't go to Mongolia. There's no anything there, South America, there's crime or whatever. You listen to people and then we arrive in these places, we meet people and people are friendly and they're welcoming and the streets are safe. And, you send the kids, I feel almost bad saying it. We're more comfortable in most countries letting our kids walk down the street and go to the park by themselves than we are in America. I'm not worried about them being abducted or anything like that anywhere for the most part. Mm-hmm. But here in America, we're so afraid. I'm worried that someone's going to call the cops on us, because there's this fear, right? That this fear of that children are at risk when they really aren't that much.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, the times that we are living in obviously are just unprecedented, and one of the things that I got when I was reading the book was, we're talking about, you're providing a sort of a handbook, for parents in how they can raise their children to be resilient. But living in unprecedented times, how can we empower our son or daughter to adapt to overcoming challenges that in many cases, there's no blueprint. There's no example that we can say, this is how we handled it in our day. Because I know that's what my parents did for me. Well, this is how we handled this. So give this a shot. But now there's so many different things that are coming up that I don't think we even thought of.
Yeah.
Well, Alan, I, with the age of information, I feel like we all are going at a pace where life changes so fast, right? Everyone would agree with that. Even before our last crazy year. And the answer we give in the book is learning, and it's that you can't know everything that you need to know in order to take on life and its challenges, but you can embody a spirit of learning and believe that you can learn whatever it is that you don't already know. Just have a faith in yourself.
There's also a sense of, we discuss this again in the book, the idea that part of our responsibility as parents is to kind of curate life a little bit for our children, make sure that they are receiving a developmentally appropriate level of challenge always, because there's a phrase we use it when we're teaching martial arts, we use it when we're parenting, we use it when we're doing all the time, challenging, but not overwhelming. That human beings grow and flourish in an environment where they're challenged, but they're not overwhelmed. And in a lot of people's lives, in the 21st century, a lot of kids in America have too few challenges. And obviously everybody's situation is unique and that's not true of everyone, but there are a lot of kids hanging out in suburbia who need to be challenged and have obstacles put in their path so that they can grow and overcome them. However, 2021 specifically with COVID and everything that's going on now, the level of stress and the challenges and the things that are going on, the number of kids that are in that situation, I think is much, much smaller. There are many more kids that need their parents to step in and decrease the amount of stress, decrease the amount of burden that's on their emotions and their psyche. And so as parents, we need to always be moving that needle back and forth and adjusting for our kids so they're continuing to get a developmentally appropriate level of challenge and stress in their lives and not being overwhelmed and also not being squishy. That was your last blog post. We become squishy if we're not challenged enough. Squishy.
That's right.
Okay. Now for everybody out there, we're going to start using technical terms now. So stay with us. Okay.
Like squishy.
Yeah. Like squishy. Let's talk about the balance of that, because I think one of the biggest issues, because on the one hand we have, I guess it's called the helicopter parent or whatever, that, you know, the child never gets challenged by anything because the parent does everything for them. And then you have, in some cases, the other side of that, which is the latchkey child, to where both parents are working and having very little, if any, influence. So the only influence they're getting is what they get from a computer screen or a television. What are some of the ways that you can see of balancing this in such a way that, you know, that we're not going to one extreme or the other?
Okay. So I think it has to do with being comfortable with a level of discomfort, Alan, that when there is a situation that is not unsafe for our kids, we can embrace it. We take a moment if our motherly or fatherly instincts kicked in that this is something that we need to protect our kids from. Take a deep breath, and before we react, decide, is it actually going to cause any physical or emotional harm for them to fail in this case, or might it just be a learning experience? I keep thinking about the comment that what we got when our kids were growing up in suburbia, that everybody was bleached and bubble wrapped, except for our kids. They were just always running around barefoot, you know, and it's okay to let them scrape a bit. Yeah. The latchkey kids, though, that's a good one, Chris. What do you want to say about that?
Well, before we go on to them, it reminds me of a time sitting there, as you say, in suburbia in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., sitting on a park bench. And we have our three kids, and I think they were aged like 2, 4, and 6 at the time. And they're just kind of running off and crawling on things and crawling over things. And at the same time, there are these two parents and one, I don't know, 3-year-old or something. And they are like running continually around. They're getting more exercise than the child is because they're like, they're casting the joint. They're trying to make sure that at any moment in time, you know, that the child can't fall, you know, a single step. And, you know, obviously if the child ends up on a roof somewhere, we need to go intervene and we need to, you know, parent to protect them from serious injury. But, you know, when the kid's, you know, 6 inches from the ground, at some point you just, you know, you need a mouthful of wood chips once in a while, just to remind you that you shouldn't climb up on things you can't climb back off of. And finding that comfort level, if we protect them, just like you say, or the helicopter parents from ever getting that slight injury, then we're going to increase the chance they develop a confidence. There's a term, you mentioned helicopter parents, and we go back to that all the time. There's a term that didn't catch on, and I'm almost sad.
Back to the technical terms.
Snowplow parents. This was, I want to say 3-4 years ago, the snowplow parents, and it didn't catch on. There was a couple articles. It was a big thing for a little while, but parents just moving all the obstacles out of the child's way. And it was with the whole scandal with parents paying people to take college entry tests for their kids. And we don't hear about snowplow parents. And I don't think it's because they've gone away. I think it's just because the term hasn't caught on.
Yeah, and one of the examples that I think of, and I was raised in a time and a place to where we rode motorcycles and we that their parents was fine, but we started at a very young age. So my dad got me a go-kart at 3 and a mini bike at 4, and you know, so I had all of these things at a really young age. And so many of the other parents were, okay, no, you're not doing that. That's way too dangerous and stuff. And unfortunately, then as a young adult, there was a group of us that went out, or actually, I guess 19, I'd still be a young adult. A group of us went out to go, and a young man about my age wanted to ride, and because he was now had turned 18, he went and got his own bike because his parents never let him do it. So he went and got it, and he wanted to go ride with us. Well, unfortunately, he was seriously injured, because he had no idea, but yet he was trying to ride with us, you know, and unfortunately, I mean, he wanted to kind of show off and things like that, and ended up getting really badly hurt, and he was hospitalized and such. And it's like, if you never allow them to get some form of bumps and bruises, at some point in time, when they are an adult, they're going to do it anyway. So let's, how about just show them how to do it the right way?
Practice. Yeah.
Because we can't always be there. And you know, when you mentioned the motorcycle, you know, at age 16, we put kids behind the wheel of a 4,000-pound weapon and say, off you go. And we're not there to watch them all the time. And I remember how I drove as a 16-year-old. It's horrifying.
And my
parents, I think, were pretty good parents and did a pretty good job of all of the things that we're describing. And yet I still was an idiot. The idea of how much of an idiot I might have been had I been, you know, more bubble wrapped is horrifying, really.
Mm-hmm. But it makes me think of gardening always. I love to garden, and that it's very important when you make these little seedlings, you know, and you protect them and you help them grow before it's time for them to go out. I learned the hard way that you can't just throw them out the door on the first sunny day. They will die, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you keep them inside all of their lives, they will never bear fruit. And it's just this gradual process. The term we give in the book is called scaffolding. It's a teacher term that you want to build and gradually let go of all the supports that you have out there for
them. And the other end of the gardening spectrum is the bonsai tree. A bonsai tree is not a species of tree. It's simply a tree that has survived adversity. And some of the most beautiful plants in the world are simply pine trees or whatever else that has lived on a little cliff edge, and it's had the strong winds and it's barely gotten enough sunlight, and it has just grown into the most beautiful and strongest plant you could hope for. And I think that speaks a little bit to what we're getting at here.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that you talk about a lot in the book, which I think is great, is communication. So share some of the ways that you believe that we can all better effectively communicate with our children.
Well, we should definitely shout at them all the time. And
use your finger
across
like this.
The room.
Yeah.
And anytime you make a correction, be sure to sound angry.
Yeah.
What else?
So I'm gonna dial back just a second here. Yeah. So I think the one of the most important aspects, this gets back to what you were asking about the latchkey kids as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone has their own challenges. And when you have, you know, both parents working in a lot of hours, and I have a lot of sympathy for anyone who has empathy, I guess is perhaps the better word, for anyone who's in that situation. We've had phases of life where we've worked lots of hours and we understand what that's like, and it changes your interaction with your kids and it changes your interaction with life at large. And the first thing we want to do is spend as much time communicating with our kids as possible. I know that just sounds so simple and boilerplate, but the more time that we spend interacting positively face-to-face in the same room, all electronics turned off, and just talking about a million things, because I think what happens sometimes is our communication with the kids becomes more and more, especially as they get older, more and more transactional. So this is the schedule, and we've got to get to here, and don't forget to pack your lunch and do your homework, and I'll see you at 6, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, those are important conversations that need to happen. But if that's 90% of our interaction, and then the other 10% is us sitting down is like, I heard that you failed math class, you know, or what's going on, you know, are you depressed? You know, you don't get really good answers when 90% of the time you're having transactional conversations, and then all of a sudden you want to have some deep, meaningful conversation about someone's feelings. Like, you're not going to have real substantive conversations. So we need to normalize communicating with our children. We need to spend as many hours. I know that sounds so simple, but it's hard because there are 1,000 other draws on our time. Reminder, there's no boss yelling at us, making sure you go talk to your kids. And there's no reminder on your phone and a big, a really little red dot next to your notifications telling you, you have to go talk to your kids now, but spending as much time talking about unimportant things as possible.
Yeah.
And then when there's something important that you need to talk about, it's just natural. It's like, oh yeah, you know, now that we've finished telling me about that book you're reading, I did want to ask you, you seemed really down when, you know, Susie, you know, said that to you.
I want to add that the way to have those conversations, those little bits, because I was one of those difficult teenagers that never wanted to talk.
She's still a difficult teenager. That's just
so not fair. I have evolved. I think that reading to your kids is a great way to create a shared experience. Mm-hmm. It's not the only one. Maybe just going out for a walk together, if you can pull that resistant teenager out for a walk, or even I think experiencing a movie together, one that will prompt questions and conversation. Yes. It's that is a simple gateway into having something that you share that is not, like Chris says, some of the difficult things to broach if you don't already have a strong connection with your kid.
Well, exactly, and let them pick it sometimes. You know, nice. Let them pick the movie because then they're going to have more questions about it. And Holly, by the way, I got to tell you, I'm very proud of the fact that I share with people that I am a teenager again.
Oh, so. How are you a teenager again? Tell me more. What does that mean for you?
I'm an empty nester.
Okay.
And so the kids are gone. They're, you know, off to college and work and things like that. And so I just decided that, you know, I need to be a teenager again. And so I'm single and a teen, you know, and an empty nester. So why not live it as a teenager than my
chronological.
You have room to explore.
Yeah, my chronological age. I don't have to do that.
That sounds great. So sign me up.
I'm right with you.
Do I have to wait until the kids move out or can I start now?
Well, I don't know about that. I think you better get permission by the person sitting next to you first before you do that one. On the
he
other
did.
Side.
I mean, we're here traveling.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. But because you made a joint decision.
That.
You made a we decision. And as long as it's a we decision, then it's got to work.
Sounds good.
One of the things that when you brought up in regards to communication, and I was thinking about a speaking engagement I had years ago in Washington, D.C., and one of the questions, and I was speaking on working with at-risk youth, at-risk teenagers, and one of the questions that came up, and they said, what do you think is the single biggest problem that you're seeing with having, you know, transported, you know, 10,000 kids, you know, or whatever? What's the single biggest thing? And I didn't prepare for it or anything, but what came out of my mouth was absentee father, either mentally or physically. And because that was the closest thing to a common denominator, because I was dealing with so many kids that were living in a single parent home. And even when there wasn't a single family home, there was an absentee parent, either mentally or physically. And it goes to what you're saying about communication. You know, if you're absent mentally, but there physically, you're still not communicating. So I love the fact that through the book, you focus on communication as like the benchmark through everything.
Hmm. Yeah. So, well, you know, parenting is not a part-time activity. It's not a spectator sport. The more engaged we are, the more intentional we are. Like we are not simply like roommates with these people for 18 years. You know, we have a responsibility over the course of 18 years to teach them all of the skills necessary to be a human being. And they start off with none of them, right? We teach them to walk. That's pretty early on and whatnot. We teach them to talk. We do these things. But if they walk out the door at 18 and they don't know, you know, if they don't know how to balance their checkbook, and if they don't understand how you get a job and how you keep a job, and if they don't understand those things, but then more importantly is getting to all of the things that you're alluding to of the resilience. If they're not capable to get up again when they get knocked down, if they're not comfortable with rejection, if they're not comfortable with all of these different things, then we've utterly failed.
Right. And unless you're planning on having them live with you for your entire life.
I love my kids. But I think that's not fair to anyone.
Exactly.
There are some parents who you can ask my 8-year-old and he'll explain that on his 18th birthday, the locksmith is going to come and change the locks. We've been so clear about this that when their nephew turned 18 during his senior year in high school,
their cousin
turned 18 during his senior year. They said, where's he going to spend the rest of, you know, how's that going to work? Because, Aunt Tracy's going to kick him out. The locksmith is coming. I said, oh, no, he has a special arrangement with, you know, your aunt, with his mother, and he can stay until graduation day. And they said, oh, okay, that's good. Do you think we could negotiate? I said, we'll talk. We'll make terms.
When you get closer.
Yeah. We'll talk. But that they need to go out. And I have been called cruel and mean and inhumane by parents, you know, usually mothers, who say that this is unreasonable and unloving. I said, no, what's unloving is waiting until the last minute and then saying, oh, by the way, you can't stay here anymore, and not having them be prepared. My 8-year-old knows that he has exactly 10 years necessary to acquire the skills to go out on his own. Actually, his current plan is to save a bunch of money before then and then buy 10 square miles and start and live in the woods. So, you know, he has some time for his plan to evolve, but he understands he needs a plan.
Mm-hmm. Are we raising a psychotic?
I hope not. We don't know. It's a changing plan.
I was just going through some old picture albums, and I was reminded of a story of my... At the time, he would have been 4, and we're boarding a plane, and he turned left when everybody else turned right. So he went into where the pilot was, and the pilot was so cool. Oh. He sat him down in the co-pilot thing, and it's like, so, you know, do you like this and everything else? And so he's grinning from ear to ear and all of this and stuff. He goes, you like the idea of flying? He goes, well, yeah, I like that. And he goes, so are you going to be a pilot someday? He went, no, I'm going to be Spider-Man.
Good one.
I was walking through the streets. I was walking through a small village here in Ireland just the other day. Not just the other day, earlier today. And there was a young man in a Spider-Man costume. Oh, just walking up with his grandmother and his little sister in a pram. And he's Spider-Man. And I stopped the, because this is Ireland, you just stop people on the street, you just start talking to them about whatever. So I stopped the grandmother, I start chatting with her. And I say, before I had kids, there was a kid who nearby, and I saw him, and he was always wearing costumes. And I thought it was so weird. When I was like 22 years old, I just thought it was the weirdest thing that this kid would wear costumes. Now that I have my own kids, I'm like, yeah, you go be Spider-Man. If you want to be Spider-Man, be Spider-Man. I wish that I had the confidence to walk down the street in a Spider-Man costume. Because, you know, we all want to be Spider-Man.
Well, you know, it's as you were starting to tell that story, I thought you were going to say, and then you turned to your wife and said, I'm going to go get a Spider-Man costume.
You don't know what I'm wearing below here.
That's
like, for all you know, I'm wearing Spider-Man. I'm all Spider-Man.
That's right. I love it. We have some questions and comments that are coming in. They come in through instant messaging or through email. One of the things that I love is that we get a lot of teachers that contact us, and because they are teaching in the middle of the day, which is what it is here in California, some of them will send them in the night before and such. This particular one reads, it says, I was struck by the words on the back of your book about the three pillars, learning, integrity, and service. We have a very large Irish family with all of the typical dramas. Not to be in the blame game, but my parents, uncles, and aunts raised our generation just as they described, lecturing, bribing, and punishing. Now, since COVID hit, a core group of my cousins and myself have decided that we're going to break that pattern and not make the mistakes with our kids our parents made with us. We have started holding a quarterly get-together, and I've been collecting book titles for recommended reading. Your book caught my eye, and we have now added it. We've included it. It says, can you give me any words of wisdom that I should use when introducing your book to my family? And this is from Andrea in Maine.
Wow. That's fantastic. Well, thank you, Andrea. Congratulations. Any words of wisdom? I think that the idea of being intentional, and we talk about this in the book, of course, and Holly harps on this continually because it's such an important aspect, that we become parents all of a sudden. And any ideas you might have had ahead of time seem quickly go away because you find out in the first like 3 days that everything you thought about parenting was wrong, right? And then we panic, and this baby tends to be crying at us, mm-hmm. And then we start doing exactly what Andrea said, is we start doing what our parents did. It's just like, well, this is how my parents responded to me, so this is how I'm going to respond to my child, and taking the time. And more important than the time is taking the energy and the intention of sitting down and saying with your partner, if you're lucky enough to have one, these are the things that are really important to me. these are the things that are really important to us. This is what we want our child's life to be and the skills we want them to have and the kind of character we want them to develop. And you mentioned learning, integrity, and service and how those are going to feed into them being the kind of person that we're hoping to raise. And having that trajectory, that intentional trajectory from birth through age 18, you know, when you go to the pediatrician, they weigh them and measure them and do all that kind of stuff. And they say, oh, you're 50th percentile for height and 10th percentile for weight or whatever you are, you know, like where are you on this like growth curve to adulthood? And we don't do that for resilience. We don't do that for all of these, for integrity. We don't do these for learning and service. And so if we don't do it ourselves, for our children, then I think we just wake up one day, we're like, oh, they're 18 and we forgot to teach them these other things. And the minute you say Irish, you start thinking Irish Catholic and you start thinking about the church playing an important role in the raising of kids, which obviously schools in America aren't allowed to do. And one of the interesting things that happened, and I've just said religion, and I probably shouldn't have said religion, but when we took religion out of schools in America, we didn't put any other moral instruction. You know, that was the moral instruction. We took out the religion and we didn't put back a secular morality. We simply said schools now only teach reading, write, and arithmetic, and that's all. And they're not allowed to probably, you know, they can't say integrity. They can't actually probably can say integrity, but that's not part of their curriculum. It's not their responsibility. And so we as parents, if we are not intentionally and deliberately and in a meaningful, proactive way, teaching our children to have integrity with themselves and with the world around them, they won't. It's completely on our shoulders, and which is, you know, where it probably belongs, but it's a heavy burden to bear, especially when you think about it.
Andrea, I love that you're going to have the opportunity to talk with your fellow family members about those kind of intentions. You're getting together and you can have a conference together about what's important to you. That's going to be marvelous. And I just want to add that rather than being somewhat of a jail cell guard, you know, who lets the kids out on good days with good behavior, be a teacher. Be someone who, rather than cracking a whip or requiring all the time, just inspire them, because you are so good at lighting the world up for them and what seems like the right path.
Yeah. We were doing an interview, I think it was 3-4 days ago, and someone said something about dinner and chores or whatever. I said, oh, well, you know, we just finished, you know, the kids just finished doing all of the dishes. And she said, the kids just finished doing what? I said, well, they just finished doing the dishes. And then I sent them outside to play so we could do the interview. And she said, what did you have to do to get them to do the dishes? So I asked them to. because like we're part of a family and they're part of the team. And, you know, it's when you think about families in this way, you know, Holly
That's
cooked
a little
dinner.
Unfair. I mean,
we've practiced. I don't want to imply that suddenly. Yeah, I don't know.
There you go.
I've been asking them for years. You know, that we make chores and obedience seem like some kind of weird, you know, supernatural skill. Mm-hmm. But we are a family unit. In our case, there are five of us, and we want a positive interaction where we all flow and everybody gets their needs met within reason and as many of their wants as can be met within reason. And that requires sometimes someone else to do the dishes. You know, sometimes Holiday cooks, sometimes other people cook. I don't know how to cook, but I'm good at dishes. I'm really good at dishes. And so the day before I had done dishes, and then this day they did dishes, and, you know, we take turns and we help each other, and that it's not some kind of punishment. And I think there's a shift in mindset from of like, oh no, I have to do the dishes, from like, oh, okay, that's how I'm going to contribute today. That's how I'm going to serve my family members today.
Exactly. And I love the fact that you just shared that you like to do the dishes, or that you do them sometimes. We had a situation. I was, when I was with my dad, I'm from a divorced family, and he remarried to a woman that had two daughters. So we were now kind of a mini Brady Bunch, in the sense we had two boys and two girls that were all close to the same age. And at one point in it, we would finish with dinner and he would say, you know, okay, you know, boys washed, girls dry, you know, or whatever. And he would just do different things. And one of us kids said something along the lines of, well, you know, Johnny at school said that dishes are like girls' work, you know, and stuff like that. And my dad says, no, And, you know, this, say this is a Friday and tomorrow we're going to do yard work. And, you know, one of you is going to pull weeds and the other one's going to put it in the bag or whatever. But he never allowed that to become an issue. And, you know, you don't believe what Johnny says or anything else, you know, and tomorrow we'll do it differently. And the opposite one will wash and the opposite one will dry.
Well, and importantly, we're creating our values in this family. Johnny out there doesn't get to dictate our family's values.
Exactly. Yep. Yes. And and we as boys, it also meant cooking. So the nice part is that we know how to cook. And in fact, my brother is one of the best cooks I know. I'm happy that you're sharing that part in regards to the fact that you just asked them and you're not asking them to do anything that they haven't seen you do also.
And that's important. And that's important. Right. The one of the interesting conversations, and I know we're getting into the weeds here a little bit, when we interact, everything's an opportunity for a lesson. So Holly talked about reading to your kids. So you read the Odyssey out loud, and then you say, did Odysseus make a good choice there? And the answer is usually no, because Odysseus made terrible choices. But then we get to talk about that. But then we can also talk about experiences in our life. One of my favorite anecdotes in the book is where Holly clipped and had to, you know, go through that wrenching, like, oh, now I need to go tell somebody that I did this. And so but that's a story. That's one of our family stories that we get to talk about integrity, about being forthcoming, you know, forthright with information and whatnot. And so it's important. So if we, and other people's situations, it sounds awful to say, but you see that family over there, the way the kids are behaving and then speaking to the parents, and then the way the parents are yelling at the kids, you know, and is that working for them? Like, is that making any of them happy? And you can just look at it. You can say, you know, the answer is no. Like, that's not working. The kid's doing whatever he wants, which is such a common, you know, thing is, you know, don't tell me what to do, whatever. But it creates a crazy energy that makes him uncomfortable. And then the parents yell at him and that makes them upset and that makes him more upset and whatnot. So you can look at other dynamics. And the question is what the rational, reasonable question is, what dynamic will work for the five of us or the four, right, the three or the two or whatever. What dynamic do we want? I want, this is how I would like to be spoken to. And I'm assuming you'd like to be spoken to in a similar way. And so how can we make sure that we only speak to each other in these ways? And so we spend, and I've actually had other parents comment about that we nitpick, and you're right, I nitpick, that one of my children, I'll say, oh, my kids were crazy this morning. You heard them, right? And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, one of them said, do you want to play a game? And the other said, no. I said, okay. It's like, yeah, but you don't, when someone says, do you want to play a game? You don't say no. You say, I can't do, I don't, I'm having trouble with my voices this morning.
Unless you're British, then you need to go, No.
You say
so,
no, thank
so many
you.
Vowels in one
word. Stop with your British imprisonment. It's not appropriate. That you say no, thank you. You say, can we play another time? You know, you speak to people. You don't ignore people. Well, you know, because you're reading a book, you still respond to people. You know, just see these little things. But in some cases, at the smallest level, manners make the world go round. And how we treat people matters. Like that's one that comes out again. How we treat people, the tone of voice I use when I speak to you affects our relationship. It affects your state of mind, my state of mind, and we need to police that and make sure that we are treating each other well.
Yeah.
We need to monitor that.
Yes. Like a good teacher.
We need to monitor that like a good teacher.
Yes. But I want to highlight a part of what you said that people might not have caught. And that is, in the very beginning, you asked your children what they thought of that other situation. You didn't tell them that that's bad. You asked them, which again is getting them to think, getting them to observe, and getting them to make that determination within themselves. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, mentioned it earlier. Don't lecture. Don't lecture. Make it a conversation, and a conversation has to go both ways. Thank you for bringing that back up.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and hopefully we can get back some of our British viewers. And
sorry, guys.
No, seriously, we're going to take a break. So for everybody out there, we are talking about resilient children. Our guests are Chris and Holly Santillo. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network, and we're talking about resilient children. So with us is Chris and Holly Santillo. And one of the things that I want to talk about, and also, by the way, if you're just now tuning in, we've been having a lot of fun, but so much so that we've whipped through time. But there was a few things I wanted to make sure that I touched on. And one of which is, I know in your book, you talk about integrity a lot, which I love. But how can we teach our children to operate in life from a place of integrity and service when there's so much noise to the contrary?
Okay. I think it helps to break it down into simple pieces, first and foremost, right? If you want to teach something, you got to define it first. And so integrity means being honest, but that has a little more to it. It means you have to also be forthright. That means sometimes coming out with answers, whether or not your parents ask for them, for example. Mm-hmm. But then there's another part of integrity, and that's following through on your obligations. And they could be obligations to other people, but they could also be obligations to yourself. And sometimes those are the hardest to follow through on because sometimes you haven't even defined them. So we need to talk with that about our kids as well. And then finally, if you fail to meet your obligations, you need to make it right. So we kind of structure out those four components of integrity to help our kids just understand what it is. And then from there,
It goes back to what we were talking about before the break, which is stories. Stories are one of the most powerful tools we have. They're, you know, the classics education. You go back to the founding fathers of America. They were learned, the education at that point in time was built on the classics. You read all of the ancient Greek and Latin classics, and then you draw lessons from them. We just have gotten away from that form of education, but it's such a powerful tool for education. And it's not a question of read this and then you'll understand things. The question is there, if I read this and then I think about it and I question it and I talk about it, then there's opportunities. And again, the stories can be lots of places. The stories can be in classical literature. They can be in your own lives. They can be in the lives of people around you. They can be in Harry Potter. They can be in Rick Riordan's Lightning Thief books, you know. It can be in movies that you like. You know, you can watch The Incredibles or Kung Fu Panda. Kung Fu Panda has some good ones. And you know, pause. I always have the controller as handy whenever possible when we're watching a movie because I want to pause. I say, why did he do this? The first live action movie that my children ever watched was A Knight's Tale with, what's his name? Ledger.
Hugh.
Heath.
Great movie.
A wonderful movie. They've probably seen it 10 times, right? And it has lessons in there about always follow your feet. It has lessons in there about changing your stars. It has lessons in there about leadership. You can see it at the end. All of the people, I don't know why I'm going into a review of a movie. It's a great movie. But the point is that my children at age 4 and 5 could explain to someone, I'd pause, be like, what is this teaching us? What are the opportunities here? And does he make poor choices sometimes too? Of course. So let's talk about the poor choices he makes. And so every time that we can say, you know, how would you behave in this situation? What was the right choice? Did the protagonist make a good choice and why? Why is an important part of that? And then were they behaving with integrity, which is what you just, you know, what you just talked about, you know, are they being honest, you know, truthful and forthright? Are they fulfilling their obligations and making it right if they ever fail to do so? Are they the kind of person that we want to be? And then, of course, the hardest, and this is the most hardest and most painful set of stories to use, is the ones from your own lives that you need to share with your kids. And there's a subtlety here that comes out. We have all of the same learning opportunity. If I say, Jimmy, somebody's like me, we could clip somebody's, or Holly in this particular case, clip somebody's side view mirror. What is Holly supposed to do? Well, Holly's supposed to leave them a note and explain to them and then offer to fix it. And that's an important part. And do you see how Holly might be, or Jimmy or whoever might be hesitant to do that? Do you understand why that might be an unpleasant thing to do? Do you understand? And in that acknowledgement that integrity is sometimes difficult, it's challenging, it's work. And I think people try to gloss that over. You always do the right thing. You never lie. None of us are perfect. Integrity, the moment we were born, our integrity was perfect. And then it's just got a little bit rough around the edges ever since then. Some people faster than others, right? And so the acknowledgement that I've made mistakes is sharing a vulnerability. And we talked earlier about making connection with our kids and communicating with our kids. Few things bring down walls and improve communication and connection better than being honest and saying, you know, so we talk about the times that being vulnerable, talking about the times where we failed to satisfy our integrity and how that made us feel. I hope that you never do that because I don't want you to feel like this, but there's a subtext there. But if you do, you're no worse than me, which is maybe an odd thing to say, but children, if we, I'm totally veering onto a slightly different but important topic here, that as parents, we tend to project a perfection to our kids. We don't want to be vulnerable, or we don't want to admit our failures. We don't want to admit that our first business went bankrupt. We don't want to admit that we had that relationship that didn't work out. We don't want to admit these things because we want our kids to think we're perfect. Mm-hmm. But sooner or later, they're going to get old enough that they're going to learn enough about the world to realize we're not perfect.
That's right.
And the gap between what we told them we were and what they figure out we are is how much of that relationship is broken, right? And if we're upfront, you know, my first business failed, I've had relationships that didn't work out, I, you know, there was this one time when I was supposed to tell the truth and I didn't, you know, like, that's who I am. And I'm still a good person, and I'm still your father, and I still love you, and I'm still all of these things that I also am, right? That, and you can be imperfect and still a great person too. And so they don't feel a crumble that one time, you know, my parents are wonderful, wonderful, wonderful parents. But there was definitely this sense of projecting perfection from them. Right. And still. And it's a sense of the family tree.
Maybe that's an in-law thing.
But I was at college, and I went to the same university my father did 30 years later. And I took a class and I failed freshman chemistry. It was the first class I had ever failed in my entire life. I was mortified. I thought my parents were going to kill me. I thought that they were going to, you know, disown me. And they didn't. They didn't do any of those things. But they said, well, you know, I guess you'll have to retake it. And, you know, it's kind of a bummer. And, you know, you should work harder next time. You know, they had encouraging and, you know, all the kind of like, you know, yes, you should do better. But people fail classes once in a while. Like, it's not the end of the world. But my expectation of what they were going to say was so different from what they actually said. And that was built by, you know, it was built in my head. So part of it's 100% my fault, of course. But part of it was built from, fear from clues that I had received from them over the years about who they were and what their expectations were. And when I failed to meet their expectations, they said, you know, it happens, do better next time. And I wish that I had known that better. And so I think it's important that we as parents in this generation do a better job of explaining it's okay. And this happens, you know, don't do it on purpose, you know, don't fail if you don't have to, you know, but imperfection is okay.
If I may, one of the things that is so beautiful about parenting is it makes us better people if we do it right. If we parent with integrity, you know, if we are setting out all of these paths for our children and then we realize we aren't walking them, then if we have integrity, we suddenly rise to the occasion, right? So that we can model the kind of behavior that we're expecting of them. Just this very morning, you know, Chris is going back to way in the past of failures. I had a conversation just this morning. Kids, I want to confess to you that I had some extreme petty jealousy and I'm so ashamed of it. It felt very wrong. It felt hopefully out of character. I explained the whole situation. I said, so what would you do to make this right? Because I know it's wrong. And I bless them. They had beautiful answers. They said, well, I think that you should tell that person congratulations, because that's going to turn it turn it right. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, that is genius. And it's true. I felt 100% better.
Well, and we've only got about another minute, and we have another listener question that's come in. So I'm going to try to run through this real quick. It says, martial arts was the salvation for our son who was spinning a bit out of control 2 years ago. At 14, his attitude had become rebellious and demanding to the point where we were about to send him off to a therapeutic program, which would have cost us many thousands of dollars. A friend suggested that we should buy a few classes at the local dojo and see what might happen. Sure enough, 2 months later, he started to miraculously change. He was obviously having self-esteem issues, and this training helped make him feel good about himself. Also, the self-discipline is a learning tool and has spilled over to the classroom with improved grades, a real win-win for us. We are so excited to see your book in Kindle so we could read it right away. Now, instead of trying to explain what happened to Jeremy to his friend's parent, all we have to do is recommend your book. And this is from Brian in Kansas.
Thank you, Brian.
Congratulations. I'm really happy to hear that. A well-run martial arts program can be a godsend. But of course, that's what, as Brian alluded to, that's what the book is intended to do, is give parents the same tools that a good martial arts instructor has. Now, the only thing I want to add is if your son is good with it, I recommend you go join that class also.
Oh, good.
And you can go support, because you're not allowed to join your son's soccer team. They frown on that. But you can typically join their martial arts class. And it is a wonderful bonding experience for families to train together.
Speaking of having experiences together. Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and also for taking the time to write this book, for living the life that you're doing and sharing it with people. I think that there is just so much value to this. And if there's anything that we can do to help get the information out to the world so that other people can see that there is so much positive going on out there. There's so many great ways to be an incredible, wonderful, loving family. Turn off your televisions and go travel with your kids. And I think you'll find a lot of benefit from it. So one thing though, what is the best way that people can, can either get the book or to reach you if they have questions, to go to the website.
Yeah,
would love if people came to resilienceparenting.info. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of articles on there. Even if you don't yet want to buy the book, just read some thoughts. Gosh, going back all the way to COVID and what it's like to teach your kids at home for the first time, mm-hmm. More recently talking about building.
And then, of course, it does offer a link to buy the book as well. And also our emails on there if anyone wants to reach
out to
us. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. We would love to have any questions or comments, please.
All right. And for any of you out there, if you're driving, don't try to write that down. Go to the answers.network page. We will have all of this information there for you. And again, Chris, Holly, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a real pleasure. Appreciate talking to you.
And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we're joined by Paul from Lake Tahoe Preparatory Academy to discuss a topic that is so important to parents, helping students to find their passion and their own unique aha moments. When you get the opportunity, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to the show through whatever podcast platform you listen to us. So for everybody, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.